Good morning. Today is Thursday, September the 1st, 271st day of the new year. Joining us this morning, Humboldt County Sheriff Mike Downey. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. How are you this morning?
Good. Nice to see you didn't send in number two.
I got him off doing something else.
Oh, good. Yeah. Good. So he has duty for this weekend?
He's got something to do. Yeah. I'm not sure what it is yet. I'm going to figure it out.
TBD, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, boy. Well, you've had an exciting couple of months in addition to the normal summer.
Summer.
With all the activities and the...
Summer's always exciting.
What was it, 8 pounds of meth?
Yeah.
Delivered into Mills' lap yesterday?
Right. How about that?
That would be...
Being in the right place at the right time.
I guess, you know, but, you know, if you're a good investigator, you know where it's going to be before it happens.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, we'll stay with that.
Our quote this morning comes from Leonardo da Vinci. Where the spirit does not work with the hand, there's no art.
Okay.
That works.
Yeah.
Kind of like...
I thought you wrote that.
Yeah. I see it's been a rough summer, huh?
Yeah. My material's old.
Are you finding that there's a lot more drug prevalence this summer? I was listening to one of the newscasts yesterday, driving down the Jordan put together, and the only one that I had question of, except for the last story, was a gal in Ukiah who ran into a tree.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that could be fatigue, that could be mechanical. Right. But each one, I'm yelling to myself, drugs, drugs,
oh,
drugs. Nine consecutive stories of local things. Every single one has a real short line or dot to connect to that very easily would be drugs.
No doubt. And we're seeing an increase. And a lot of it has to do with our enforcement efforts, too. We've stepped those up. We've made some changes in our own, you know, drug task force so it's easier for them to do the work they need to do. So I think we've increased our enforcement efforts as well. But yeah, we've got a lot of heroin and other drugs pouring into the county as well.
Because the demand is here, or because this is a safe haven to park it kind of as a distribution center?
Well, I think there's a demand here, and I also think it's a distribution center. The biggest distribution center in the past was the I-5 corridor. Well, there's been so much pressure put on that corridor that 101 corridor is becoming a preferred, pathway, both north and south. So I think you're finding that more of it has shifted over this way. But it's a distribution spot as well.
Well, yeah, because we've had 40 or 50 years worth of distribution channel development.
We know how to do it.
Yeah, who's putting the pressure on I-5? Is that
it's been an ongoing thing. Higher patrol, they all have worked on interdiction type stuff.
Huh? Can we get them over here?
Well, they're here.
Okay, yeah. More of them here.
I don't know if there's more of them here, but we're working in conjunction with those types of task forces all the time.
It's because you're a warm, embracing, caring, sharing kind of guy.
Yes.
I thought so. KINS, News and Information Time is 8:19. Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:23. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Mike Downey. Mike, you guys had a little bit of an interesting experience yourself, and I didn't land in your lap.
Right.
But the situation in McKinleyville, it's been a while since we've had a standoff. I can remember I probably shouldn't even try, but I'm going to. 9 years ago, downtown Eureka?
We had one there, and there's been a couple of more minor ones since in between, but one's been the most significant in some time.
So what my recollection of the news regarding that was, it was somebody who was mentally unstable.
Correct.
Was known for whatever reason by you guys. You know, this wasn't the first interaction with them. Something happened, and you guys kind of hung around, and all of a sudden he makes a run and starts shooting, and which is not a good way to say good morning, officer. and then it kind of came to a real rough end.
You know, our
is that fair?
Well, I think that's a fair. Okay. I mean, that's a condensed version, the Reader's Digest, obviously, but that's a fair, characterization of what happened. I mean, we definitely had an individual who had some mental illness issues and was pushed in his mind to the point of becoming violent. I'll never forget. I was giving updates to the press every hour on the day that it occurred. That it all happened, and I felt very confident. In fact, I kept telling the press there, I felt pretty confident our dialogue was good with him, that we were making some inroads, and I felt that we would probably end this thing without any type of further violence. In fact, we went to bed that night hoping that was the case, but about 1 o'clock in the morning, that all changed immediately, and you have no way of forecasting those types of things or anticipating those types of things. It depends on the actors involved. And it came to a point that we had, other lives and property in danger and in jeopardy, that dialogue had to end. And that was precipitated by his actions.
Was it something, was there a triggering event? Or was it just time, and it got to the point where the personality took over?
Right. I think it was time, the length of time it took during the negotiations. I believe there was an issue of either not taking medication or just coming to a point of frustration on his point where he didn't want to have any more dialogue, felt that, we were intruding upon him and possibly were going to make some type of dynamic entry, which was not the case. That was the last thing we ever wanted to think about, is doing some type of dynamic entry on an issue like that, unless people's lives are at stake. But we had painstakingly gone through and removed all the folks around his apartment so that we could limit any type of exposure by the public to any kind of firearm danger. And there was quite a few rounds fired by this individual out into the area around surrounding there.
So your folks are there.
Right.
Was there, during the period of time, because it was so elongated, I guess, you had different shifts of folks coming in.
Right.
Did that change anything? Or was it just different bodies behind the badge?
No, it's an interesting thing that occurred, the dynamics. You know, when this started to occur because of the rounds being exchanged and realizing we had to extricate people out from their surrounding buildings, I put out a call to Mendocino County to Sheriff Tom Allman, who's a good friend of mine, and they have a rescue recovery vehicle that is designed for this type of thing. It's called a Bearcat. It's armor-plated. It can take rounds into the vehicle and it doesn't penetrate or that type of thing. So a call went out to him and he was more than willing to send his vehicle up here. And also, unbeknownst to us, he sent members of his SWAT team. We had additional six or eight tactical members that showed up. So we were actually...
He wasn't sure you guys could drive the truck? Is that what it boiled down to?
It's not our truck. But the nice thing about it, it gave us the opportunity to have you know, operational periods where people could be fresh on the line and not be, you know, tired. In fact, we had already set up for that the next morning to have Pelican Bay send up their SWAT team to relieve the people we had online all night. So, you know, when you go into an elongated operational period like this, you have to start thinking immediately about your personnel. You got to make sure that they stay fresh. You got to make sure that they're not overwhelmed or tired or fatigued to the point that mistakes are being made. So that is an intricate part of any planning you're doing for these long-term events is the personnel you have online.
How long do you feel comfortable having somebody be the primary contact, to be there before you rotate them back and bring somebody else?
You mean our tactical folks?
Yeah.
Well, you know, when you start talking about tactical folks, and I was one myself for a number of years, you always want to be involved in what's going on. So you have to make sure that you're sending the right message to them. And, you know, I mean, if they're online for 3 or 4 hours or even a couple hours, that's a long time. So you try to bring them out every couple hours and give them a rest and put some fresh people in.
Just a little relief, not little pulling relief. Them off project, but just a little bit of a blow, so to speak.
Right.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:30. We'll be back with more from Mike Downey. Good morning, KINS. News and Information Time is 8:35. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Mike Downey, Humboldt County Sheriff. Talk Shop presented by Redeck and CDH Painting. Mike, in a situation like this where there is a standoff, and whether the individual is mentally stable or not, does that influence how you approach?
Oh, of course it does. You know, and when we go into these operational periods like this, you know, not only do we have a trained tactical team, but we have train negotiators, and not only negotiators from the law enforcement aspect, but we bring in mental health, public health people to sit in with us and assist us with the negotiations. Plus, they usually have some intel that we don't have about the individual and medications they may or not be on, or when the last time they saw them. So it gives us a complete picture of who the individual is and what we might be able to expect. Again, we have to expect the unexpected, and that's sometimes difficult. But we have a whole collaborative team that comes together. It's not just a sheriff representative there negotiating with this individual. In fact, I went into the negotiations a number of times in the van and listened to them negotiating with them, and it's a team effort.
So what do they talk about?
Well, they try to find out, you know, what the motivation is. They try to find out, well, how can we mitigate this? How can we, you know, what can we do to make this better, or have you come out, or, you know, but sometimes people get into a state of paranoia where they think that if I come out, you're going to shoot me, or there's no way out for me at this point, and this is the way it's going to be. So we have to
try. Kind of a lost cause.
Yeah, and we have to try and build a rapport. And at one time, my folks felt that they had were in that process of building a good rapport with them. And those things broke down. unexpectedly. And we, you know, it was tragic that it had to end the way it did. But we're reactionary also. So
so how does that differ, let's say, from a situation in a financial institution or a business where it's not somebody who's on medication? Now, maybe it's somebody who's looking for some medication uh-huh. as the triggering event to break in, but they're not at that point. How does
differ? It changes the dynamics because you're dealing with a person who's a whole different profile, and their motivation is much different than the incident we're talking about earlier. So at that point, you know, our people train with all types of different profiles and typical incidences that could occur. I mean, they go to school for this type of thing. And
so the bank robbery that's inside that has a couple of the bank tellers with them is probably a common scenario to train to.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure. And so the biggest thing is establishing that contact. Sometimes just establishing the conversation, the dialogue, can be very difficult because they don't want to talk, you know, they don't want to talk to you, or the information they want to give you is one way. They don't want any dialogue back. They have demands. So those are dynamics also you have to deal with. So it's building that dialogue, building that rapport, trying to have some type of personal connection, some type of connection where you can relate. And we may have to run two or three different negotiators through before we find one that really relates with this person we're trying to deal with. But it's an exhaustive procedure.
Exhaustive on the other side, too.
On the side of negotiators?
No, the side of the guy that's inside with the gun whatever the thing is. At some point, fatigue. He doesn't have a second team.
No, he doesn't. And that's a good point. I was just thinking about the same thing is the fatigue factor on their part, which is dangerous. If that fatigue factor becomes more and more exacerbated, it becomes more and more dangerous for everyone involved because their the clarity of their thought process is diminished because of that fatigue factor. So it is definitely a concern.
So on your side, or the outside, one of the primaries is to let it play out times on your side.
Mm-hmm.
On the inside, it's the opposite dynamic, trying to get something taken care of and get going. But at some point, once you start getting that time played out, it becomes not a positive anymore, but it becomes a negative because of the irrationality on the inside.
But sometimes that fatigue factor can also work in our favor. If the person on the inside, it becomes more and more fatigued and tired. You know, either they're going to fall asleep or they're just going to get to a point where they go, I'm done. I got to get out of here. I can't handle this anymore. And they're going to come out. And that's what we want to see. We want to see a successful conclusion where the person comes out and no one's harmed.
So it kind of builds pressure, internal pressure on them.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the things people don't understand about our tactical teams, our tactical teams are trained for any type of situation, but they're really not our first force option. The biggest thing for them is to have a presence. To have that tactical team presence for that person to know that we are prepared to do anything, but we're trying to be more of a deterrent by the visual rather than having to do anything dynamic. The last thing we want to do is any type of dynamic entry. That is like so far on the totem pole, it's not even visible unless something happens that propels us to that.
Or they come running out thinking they're going to make a run for it successfully.
Right.
Same, yeah. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:42. We'll be back with more from Mike Downey. Good morning, KINS News and Information Times, 8:46. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Humboldt County Sheriff Mike Downey. Mike, with the standoff, you mentioned that there was a rig from that Sheriff Tom had that came up. Are there specialized pieces of equipment that make sense for your department to have, or is this more of the regional share kind of thing? Or is that even an option because this stuff develops so quickly?
Well, it's not an option to share. This time it worked out because actually this is the second time we've asked for their help. I remember a couple of years ago, one of my deputies was shot in Shelter Cove. We had a standoff there. We're actually looking for an individual. Their Bearcat was brought up at that time to assist along with some SWAT team members. So this is the second time we've requested it. You know, I have agreements. I have an EOD team, an explosive device team. In fact, last night I just sent two of my deputies down to Mendocino County to assist with a couple of grenades that they found. So we share resources.
They're coming back okay?
Yeah, they came back okay.
Okay.
All
good.
Their fingers. So anyway, but the Bearcat is different. It's a response vehicle that we don't have time to wait for. It was a part of a proposal I made for Measure Z funds this last year. The board encouraged me to find additional funding to help offset the cost. It's about a $290,000 vehicle. And I have identified funding for about $120,000 of it. So it's going to go back before the board, I believe, this next Tuesday for the additional funding to come out of Measure Z. If you talk to the people that we extricated from those buildings on 2 weeks ago, they'll tell you how vital this vehicle was because we were able to safely get in there, take them from their residences, and take them to a place of safety without any fear of a projectile penetrating this vehicle.
So and you just kind of drove up, they climbed in, and you drove them off. It was a transport vehicle.
Yes, and that's what it really is. It's a rescue recovery vehicle. And also it was very instrumental in placing our people in place as we rotated them out because of the fatigue issue we talked about. And interesting enough, this other funding source is through Homeland Security monies, which is a committee of fire, police, and public health. And every one of my partners on that committee all agree that this is a vehicle we need. So that's why they came behind me in securing these other funds. So it's going to go before the board on Tuesday. I'm anticipating it to be approved. And it takes about 6 to 8 months to actually manufacture the vehicle.
Order one up. Yeah
and get it manufactured and get it here. But it's not only used for a dynamic incident like this, it's also used for serving those high felony risk search warrants, arrest warrant type situations. It's a vehicle to protect my deputies and any other police officer in the county because it'll be a vehicle used for the county of Humboldt, not just the sheriff's office.
So this is something that's going to be used pretty regularly. It's not going to be just parked in the garage waiting for an event every once in a while.
Right. Not only used for actual instances, but for training also.
I would think that this would help when the guys are having to serve those pot farms that haven't filed and are unpermitted.
Well,
it gives them a little bit of extra cushion, too, to go up and make contact with somebody.
You know, I mean, we'd have to have more information than that, obviously. But anything that could be of a dangerous nature to our deputies or police officers in the county, or fire, for that matter, because we could use it extensively for fire.
Thanks for coming by, Mike.
All right, thank you.
Have fun with your toy.
All right.
See everybody tomorrow.